All right. Can we start by getting your name, your age, and your pronouns?
You want me to spell my name?
Sure.
My name is Erica Bridgeford, ErikaBridgeford. My pronouns are she and they, and I am 50, turning 51 next month.
I guess I like to start positively. So, what's one of your proudest achievements or something that you look back on and feel proud of yourself for?
I think something that I'm really proud of myself for is so I have avoided being the executive director at the Community Mediation Center. I avoided it for like 18 years because I saw everybody, other people doing it. I would recruit other people to do it. Like when it needed a new ED, I would be like, okay, this person went through training, maybe they'll be ready, So I was great at recruiting and supporting people to do the job, but I was like, I'm not doing that shit. That is not the fun job. It looks scary. It has a lot of the tasks that I hate. So, I don't like being in an office from 9 to 5. I don't like returning emails or phone calls or grant writing and just all of the things. That's the ED's job. None of that is anything I wanted to do. And so I'm most proud of not, it's not about that I took the job, it's that I really made a decision that I could do the job. Because I really the avoiding it turned out was just fear that I wasn't going to be good at it, that I couldn't do it, that I wouldn't know what I was doing. But that was based in watching how grassroots nonprofit executive directors look and how they function all the time. And they look stressed and worried and operating from a place of lack. For the organization, it's always about the crumble. They're barely making it financially. It's just, it doesn't feel like peace of mind, And I needed peace of mind if I was gonna do it. Because that's the only reason I've stayed in this work so long is because I really love it. It doesn't feel like work, it feels like a natural, organic part of who I am. An executive director did not feel like that to me from what I could see. So I got to a place 2 years into the job where I decided I could do it, but not do it like I'd ever seen it done before. I just had to figure out what I needed it to look like in order to do it. So I instituted self-connection days that everybody had to take one day just to nurture their peace of mind during their 5-day work week, that it's a part of your work week because you can't nurture in Baltimore peace if you're not nurturing peace inside of yourself. I just took the laws of my life and inserted them into the job. And then I was like, I'm the boss. I get to make everybody do this shit. But I was afraid to do things that are outside of what people say are possible is possible in workspaces, quote unquote professional spaces. And so I'm very not what people call professional. I'm very outside of those norms and boxes. And it's what makes me successful in the job. And so I'm very proud of myself for letting myself surrender to me and what I needed so that I could do something that I didn't think I would be good at doing.
You talked about professionalism, and I'm wondering how that's tied to queerness, where often, especially like formal attire or even dress codes are used as a way to discriminate against and police queer people's expression. And I'm wondering how that ties into your story.
That's amazing that you said formal attire because the first thing that came to mind when you said professional attire, you know, like, and how it plays into queerness. So where it specifically tied into my story is, it took me a while. It was probably maybe just, it was definitely before the pandemic. So maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. So I was tired of hearing people say to me, especially in relationships, men say, "You think you're the man in this relationship?" And I'd be like, I mean, if your manhood is in jeopardy because of how I am, that's a you thing. Like, I don't, I'm like, I can't be responsible for being around me makes you, you know, feel like you're in the presence of a man who might be more manly than you, I guess. Like, I didn't even know where that was coming from. And I kind of did. Like, I paid attention to, like, they're kind of right. Like, I am, and my father always said, like, I have 3 brothers, and my father jokingly but kind of seriously is like, yeah, you my only true son. Like, whatever manhood means to him, like, I was very much that in the ways that he respects, you know, like, what it means to really be a man in this world. And they wanted a boy. Like, my parents literally, as teenagers, got pregnant on purpose. I'm the only child they had on purpose. And their intention was, we're going to have a boy that will change the world, because what they had seen at that time, you know, and they were teenagers, so they saw men rising to power and activism. So I was going to be named after Malcolm X, and my middle name was going to be Patrice, after Patrice Lumumba, because he had led the revolution in the Congo, you know. And so it wasn't that there weren't women that they respected, but I think at that time, you know, the way they were socialized growing up in the 50s, being born in the 50s, it was like men were the leaders, you know, who in activism, the Martin Luther Kings, the Malcolm X's, the, you know. And so when I was born a girl, they embraced it immediately and was like, oh, well, we know who the women leaders are. She'll just be named after them. So I'm named after Erica Huggins and Angela Davis. But back to the dressing. So it's not lost on me that that was the, I don't think that they were wrong. Like, so it, in understanding that I was going to come with heavy masculine vibration and energy. And so I got to a point in my life where I started, because I see people being ladylike, and I wasn't, you know, I can put on some heels and shut down the room, but I'm most comfortable when I had on a dress and combat boots, you know, like, or if I found some really slick Converse that match it, or if I, you know, like, and I would dress my, when my daughter was born, I would dress her and my son exactly the same in, like, the boys' department of the store. Because I just thought that was so cute for a girl to be dressed in boys' clothes. Because I liked wearing ties, you know, like, whatever, all of the social stuff that was boys' stuff. When it was time to get dressed up, especially, I wanted to put on a suit, you know. And so, but I didn't lean all the way into that. Because until I was older, so it was like in the 90s when Boys to Men came out, like, it was fashionable that women could put on a tie and jeans, you know, because you look like Boys to Men. So it wasn't, it looked more like a fashion thing than a, no, this is how I woke up feeling today kind of thing, you know. And I don't think it gave me an excuse. I didn't feel like I had full permission to just wear a tie because I felt like wearing a tie. Like, it being in fashion made me feel like I had more permission to just, like, blend in with, that's what people are doing now anyway. But I didn't realize that that's what it was until I got older. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I had heard myself my whole life saying, I'm not a lady, but I'm definitely a woman. Because I kept trying to find, like, where's that middle place that allows the parts of me that has big dick energy. And I just, you know what I mean? Like, it's just the truth. And people see it in how I move and how I walk. I was the only woman leader of an all, like the 300 Men March movement was a movement by and for men. And I was a woman leading that movement, recruiting men to that movement, recruiting women to that movement. But men were doing the, you know, front, it was for them to address violence. But I was always that person, like the girl with a group of guys. So I kept trying to find language for it throughout my life. And so because ladylikeness is pushed, it would always offend me when people were like, you know, you're supposed to be ladylike. And I would be like, ladylike? Like, that's not, I'm not comfortable in ladylike. I'm not saying you shouldn't be, but it's not, it don't, it's, ugh, like, it just made me feel bad. So a woman felt better for me because it still had big dick energy in it somewhere for me. And then, like, about 6 years ago, I was tired of, like, thinking about it. And I realized, like, and I had gotten to a place, I think when I turned 48, I got to a place especially where I was like, oh, I wake up every day, and that's when I know which vibration I'm either more heavily in or neither. So sometimes I wake up feeling in this more feminine flow. Sometimes I feel in more masculine flow. And sometimes I'm not in any of that. I just am, you know what I mean? And so I started thinking and allowing myself to let my clothes and my jewelry reflect that stuff, the gender or genderlessness of me. So I went on Facebook one day and I was like, is gender flexible a term? Because I feel like that's what I am. Like, I literally felt like I was just flexible with it. But I had never heard that term, but it was the best thing for me. So I said it, and I feel, and Jabari Lyles was like, sis, you can be whatever the fuck you want. If that's what you call it, then that's what it is. And I was like, okay, thanks. And so, like, that was the term I started using. So fast forward to last year, we get an email at the Mediation Center from the White House that we're invited to. It looked like it was saying we were invited to a Christmas party. Turned out that's not what it was. But we thought that's what it was, the way it was worded. Everything, but there was an invitation, the tree lighting. Like, you know, we were like, oh, we going to the White House to the Christmas party. Because we had been involved in some work with the White House. So we thought, like, that's what it was, right? So everybody's getting their outfits together. And I was like, I am not going to the White House in the fucking gown. I want a dope-ass suit, head to fucking toe. I'm going to shut that bitch down, just straight, like, and my hair was cut short. And so I went to the men's warehouse. I was like, I don't want, like, a woman's suit tailored. I want a man's suit, and I'm going to rock that shit, and I'm just going to love it. And so I went to the men's warehouse, and I found this blue velvet suit, tuxedo pants, like, ugh. And then it occurred to me that I was tired of rolling my sleeve up on my nub side with all my clothes my entire life. And I was like, I'm going to get that shit tailored to fit my nub. So it's just going to be a short sleeve on one side and a long sleeve on the other side. So it meant everything to me that dressed in a man's suit was the first time that I was actually going to have clothes tailored to fit my nub. Because I felt like this is my, I'm going to be all the things that I really am, completely in my full comfort. And I'm going to walk up in that bitch and people going to be like, that's going to be the talk of the White House party. And there was this one-handed dyke, I think. Like, we think she was a dyke. Not really sure. Because she also had on lip gloss. So I'm not really sure. Like, I just could not fucking wait for people to just be confused at my amness, you know. And my friend Tracy was like, well, you're not supposed to pay for that suit. And I was like, what you mean? So she explained to me how some comedian paid for some other comedian's suit the first time he went to the Oscars. And like what you do, she said, what you do in the world for us is not just about, like, it's been for us. And so you going to the White House in the gender expression that you want, with tailored to your nub, that's a for all of us thing. That's not just a for you thing. So I feel like people should just give $5 and $10 to it. And I was like, I'm not asking community to do that. And she was like, all right, but I feel like clear messages from your ancestors, that's what you're supposed to be doing. So I tried to avoid it. And I actually needed help getting the suit. This was the thing. Like, I was going to have the money in, like, 3 weeks, but it would have been a week after the party. So, like, I literally needed the money. So I was like, well, I'm going to borrow it from somebody and give it back. And the person that I wanted to get it from, who I knew would have loved to do it, just literally was not available to answer the phone when I needed her to answer. So I woke up one morning. It was like, fuck! And I made a Facebook post, and I had a picture of the suit. I posted the suit. I said, y'all, can y'all just send me money? You know, like, I only needed like $230 or whatever it was. When I tell you, these motherfuckers. So I posted it at 7:30 in the morning. And then I was scared to look because it hurt me on the inside to ask for this kind of help, which is something I needed to heal, right? Because it shouldn't have hurt me, but it did. I put my phone down, like, I don't even want to see that shit. I got in the shower. I came back by, like, 8 o'clock. There was $400 had been sent to my Cash App, between my Cash App, my Venmo, and my Zelle. 2 weeks later, I had received $4,000. People did not give a fuck about the suit no more. Because clearly, I've been had the money for the suit. But it literally turned into this, like, you have been a miracle to us. We just want to give you a miracle. And it was all around me showing up in this gender expression of, like, freedom for myself. In a professional setting at the fucking White House. Like, you know? And it cracked me open in ways because the acceptance of it. And it made me realize the privilege that I had. Because, and I cried over this one day because I thought about people in my family, my friends that I grew up with, trans people I met along my life who did not get this kind of, like, all of the community embracing them to wear what they wanted to wear, you know, and supporting it and sending money to it. And please send us the pictures and we can't wait till you shut the White House. Like, that's not most people's experience in their gender expression when it's opposite of what people are used to or what people think their norm should be. But I realized I had a privilege because I had become, I was older, right? So there's something about being older when you really have come more into your who the fuck I am in the world anyway, that people, you don't really care as much about what people think, so it gives you that freedom, but then people treat you differently because you are, like, standing already in who you are. But also, I had become a quote-unquote name in the city, like, I'm a public figure, and so what I do and what I say and how I show up in the world, people already celebrate and embrace. So kind of like, not anything I say, because people definitely get mad at shit I say and do, but things that are about me, I was just more in a position of people to support. And I know that a lot of people, that's just not their experience. So it felt like I really needed to be careful and intentional with this privilege that I had, like, that I didn't take it for granted, that I didn't fuck it up, that I represented well. You know, like, it was like a pressure that felt really good because it was, like, mixed in with my freedom at the same time. So that was a long answer to you, but that's...
I heard you touch on three different things, and I wanted to bring them back and see which one you wanted to revisit. The first one was how changing fashion norms can create freedom or restriction in gender expression and how that applies maybe differently to people of different races, how different styles change over time. The second thing that you mentioned was patriarchy in the Black Power movement and how male-dominated Black organizing spaces can tend to be, and sometimes the regressive gender ideologies that come along with Black masculine-centered organizing. And then the third thing that you touched on was gender expression as not even an identity, but, like, a pure form of freedom and of expression.
Oh my God. First of all, you are brilliant with these fucking questions. Okay, patriarchy, gender expression is freedom. And what was the first thing you said?
Style.
Oh. I think the one that's impacted me the most that I'm aware of right now is the patriarchy in activism. In black activism specifically. And I don't know if it works the same way in white activism. Because it seems like white women seem to rule the activism world over in white activism spaces. Right? Is that, that's a thing, right? White women, right? Which is, and which for me, I also experience a lot of being very aware that I would say that, like, quote unquote, well-meaning white women are like the bane of black people's existence. Like, for, and probably for that big part of that reason, it's just as harmful. Yes. Like, it's, yeah. So that's a whole different conversation. But, so I was fortunate that my father, specifically as a black man, who grew up in, you know, in the civil rights movement, in a more, you know, called the Black Panther Party is called, you know, the more militant of the civil rights everything, right? And so there's just a lot of patriarchy everywhere. And it reminds me of how, that's how you know you've oppressed the people, right? So white patriarchy oppresses people of color. And you know you successfully oppress people when they are then carrying out those same norms that you've oppressed them with, right? And so this is how then black men end up taking up patriarchy as a way that they operate in the world. And so with activism, especially because it's violence, right? Because the space that I work in is anti-violence. I call it peace work now, but it's, you know, it's anti-violence work. And then we live in a world where women are supposed to be protected physically. And, you know, it's men's job to physically protect women. And if it's violence, then women shouldn't be in that work. It's kind of, it rarely gets said out loud in public spaces. But when I tell you that's the fucking thing, what the fuck is she doing here on the front lines with us? We now have to, while we're trying to do this anti-violence work, now because we're men, we also got to look out for her and protect her if she going to be out here with us. So it feels like a distraction to men, if I'm being perfectly honest, right? And I don't think that they are aware that that's what it is. But because I've been not just standing on the front line with them, but often leading them, the shock that I have experienced from men about how much they don't have to protect me in those spaces, of how I'm actually wiser than them. So I keep myself safe because I know how to move in the alleys and gutters of Baltimore. You know what I mean? So you don't got to protect me. You the one that's about to get everybody, get all of us shot. Like, you need to, you fall back a little bit. I got it. You know what I mean? There's a shock that comes with, that as a woman, I can literally roll up on any corner in Baltimore and have conversations with the men and boys that are standing there in ways that draws them in and doesn't make them feel threatened the way sometimes the men move when they pull up, because men do pull up often with that ego and that whatever all of that shit is that they get socialized with. It makes men that they're trying to approach, everybody puts those machismo guard up. And as a woman, I'm just like, okay, all of that is bullshit, because I'm just showing up with love. I'm just showing up with treating you like a human being. I'm just showing up with, you know. And so because Baltimore is so much a real, recognized, real place, it's my realness that makes me be able to move in any crowd, you know, and in whatever the situation is. And so that confuses men. Like, they don't understand what that secret sauce is. Because as a woman, men have been resentful that I have become a public figure, when they are also doing anti-violence work, people have literally said, made posts, made videos, gone live. Why she always in the news? How come they not over here following what I'm doing? I've been doing this since 2015, which is hilarious to me, because by 2015, I had already been in the game for 20 years, and it's not a competition. You know what I'm saying? So I'm starting that it's not a competition. So the fact that you view it as a competition when we're trying to save lives and we're trying to create peace, that's why you aren't getting the attention and publicity, because you're doing it for those reasons, right? And I'm not. And so that's been a lot of what I've had to navigate, is the men being in there negative feelings about me being the voice, me being the leader, me being the face, me being the one that people trust. And when they feel like, well, I'm just as whatever as she is, but you're not though, bro. Like, you, you're not, you're you and I'm me, and whatever you, whatever vibration you putting out is not landing the way that it needs to land in order to do this particular thing. So do what you do and I do what I do, because all the shit need to be done, but it's not a competition. And anytime you try to compete with me, I wasn't aware that there was a competition, but you trying to compete, and so this shit is not going to go the way you think, right? And so men end up with their feelings hurt, their egos crushed. I've had to have arguments, put people in their place. And I don't even like using that terminology, but it's I saw a post one time that says, stop fucking with people when you don't know their their rank in the spirit realm. And it's having to deal with men's egos in this work that made me understand what the fuck that means. Because when I tell you, it makes me, having to deal with men, the way that some men address me or are jealous. It's jealousy is all it really is. I'm aware that like all my ancestors show up like, no, the fuck you won't, you know? And then I have to say things that make them realize where they actually are in their journey, right? And it's not where they think they are. So that's the like put them in their place part where it comes in. But I've also experienced in that same, I experienced extremes. So while I experienced that, I also experienced, because I'm in this work, the men who really are about I am because we are, love my shine, love my power, nurture my power, nurture my, you know what I mean, my dopeness, my big dick energy. Like, they love it. They like, yeah, she, I think her swinging a little bit bigger than mine, yo. Like, and they love it. And so when they show up by my side, it is a protection the same way women protect. You know, like, it's a group community kind of protection. It's not a, as a man, I gotta protect her because there's something about her that's a little bit more fragile than me. It's like a, no, I have her back kind of thing, because when there's this kind of power, it's all of our responsibility to protect it. And I've seen black men step up in Baltimore like that in my circles. And so it seems like a myth, like it defies the myth that black men don't protect black women ever. Like I'm able to experience both sides. So I know what people mean when they say black men don't. But then I have this other experience where I see they ride with me, for me, around me, show up and hide in corners, will jump out of bushes if they need to. Just when somebody thought I was by myself, they'd be like, except she wasn't. You know what I mean? So I've got to experience all of it. Yeah.
My next question is about intersectionality, which I feel like is this buzzword that's thrown at black people who hold more than one identity, of which we both are. Yeah. But while I've seen you participate in activism around each of those individual identities, I've also seen you buck like a singular attribution of any difficulty that you face to one of those identities. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk more about that.
Thank you. That's really important. So what I have struggled with in my life, not so much now, but so I was just being me, living my life in the world. I didn't realize I was an intersection. You know what I mean? Until I did the TED Talk, and in the YouTube comments of one of them, somebody said, if this person is at all LGBTQ+, they will be the supreme leader of the inevitable social justice utopia. And it's like my literal favorite fucking comment that's ever been made about me, because I was like, and it was before I like fully came out as bi and gender flexible and stuff. And so it literally was one of the things that gave me permission to be like, actually, I really want to eat some pussy. It literally was like, oh shit, they right. I'm definitely need to tell some people that I need to be. Actually, I like all of y'all. Like, you know. And so, and the intersections that about me, or the things that people see about me that they think are most important, or that they think most impact me, they're generally wrong. And that's why I buck against saying, oh, she's this or that or that or that. When people are like, well, tell me a story. I'm like, which one? Because I'm like 11 bitches that I can think of right now. So which story do you want? Like, because that really is the experience that I have with me. Like, I'm not one thing anyway. And the place that I feel most lonely is around having one hand, because I don't meet other people that have limbs missing that I really bond with. So I have Black community, I have queer community, I have activism community, you know, like I have community in all these other places. And I don't like the word disabled, so I get into, people don't like that I say handicapped, like people in the disabled community be like, you're not supposed to be using that word. I'm like, I thought we get to label ourselves. Like, what do you mean? Because the word handicapped by definition means you have something that just makes it a little bit more difficult for you to be successful as other people. And that's what I experience. Like, I experience challenges that just make it, success looks different for me. The way that I have to go about it might be a little bit more challenging than how somebody. So I have a handicap, like the literal meaning of the word. And so people will come and say, well, you know, this also means two and by, you know, that they're more than one ability and all of that stuff. And I'm like, I get it. So call yourself disabled. I like handicap. I think it feels good. It's funny. It makes people go like, oh shit, which is me anyway. Like, leave me alone. And especially if I'm gonna feel alone in it, let me call me what I want to call me. You know, like, it's not hurting you. And so I love being in a place now where I know how to articulate. If humanity is about like being different, like experiencing what difference feels like, and then owning that you are just remarkable, right? And that being remarkable means you, people notice you because they're supposed to. You're not what they expected. I'm not what people expected in my Blackness, in my ghetto-ness, in my my West Baltimore tongue is not supposed to be in boardrooms and speaking on international panels. And I don't change the way that I talk. And I don't, you know, there have been whole think pieces written about the way that I talk. That shit blew my mind. But it's because I own all of me and I celebrate all of me. And I think all of me is magnificent. And when people tell me, oh, you're not actually disabled, Like, that's like telling somebody you don't see color and so you didn't realize I was black. When people be like, I didn't realize you even had one hand, I need you to rethink what you just now said. Like, so are you saying you didn't see it? Or when you saw it, the way that I showed up in the world destroyed all the stereotypes you had about what somebody with one hand was supposed to look like and act like and be like? Because that's different. It's not that you didn't notice that I had one hand. You just also saw my wholeness, and that's what glitched your brain, right? But just in the last year, I was able to say, like, ask my people who love me, went to high school with me, like, that's their joke. Like, she ain't handicapped. I don't know why she got that handicap sticker on her car. Like, she don't need that. And I'm like, except, like, I literally once a year had to stop using my hand because of overuse. My elbow will give out, or my shoulder will give out, or my hand will literally be sprained just from using it too much. Y'all don't experience that. Like, I think I'm in a different category, you know? So I can't just, I'm very aware that I came here into this realm, this go round, to try my best to experience everything I can possibly be. And so it meant, like, literally being all of these things, not just the physical things. So I'm black, and like all of the things that would be oppressed in society when you, a lot of things that would be oppressed in society when you look at them. But then even internally, I'm diagnosed bipolar, I'm ADHD, you know, so like all of the places, you just name something, I'm probably it, you know. But I feel like that makes, I feel like we have superpowers, you know, because we understand deeply acceptance. We understand deeply freedom. We understand deeply love in ways that people have walls and boundaries around because they don't have to experience not being accepted in those areas. And because we do, we see realms that they don't experience, you know. But then we get to bring those realms to this reality. And that's, so I can't just be named, labeled as one thing. I'm owning, I have to own all of it, because all of it makes up my magnificence in real life. Yeah.
Okay, one more question. What's queer about Baltimore?
Baltimore gotta be the queerest place in the fucking country. Like, I swear to God, I swear to God. So one of my friend Tracy, she is also queer. She's actually the person who first, I never, so like, we were probably friends. I probably met her like 20 years ago. And I'd never heard the word queer before. She was the first person I ever heard use it. She's from Columbus, Georgia. She's bisexual and polyamorous. And at the time, I considered myself a hoe, but I didn't understand polyamory at all. You know what I'm saying? More of a pimp than a hoe, actually. So if I'm going to be real about it. But, and so I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going to fuck whoever I want. And nobody get to say nothing about it. But I would have said that, like, when I'm in a quote unquote relationship, I would have said, oh, monogamy is the thing that I'm going to choose, right? Because I didn't understand the joys and beauty of polyamory. Like, I really, it glitched all of my social conditioning. So she helped me to understand how polyamorous I actually was, and that monogamy was a choice, not love's end goal, right? And so that shifted the game for me. And so in all of these conversations, like, then I came to understand queer. And she said to me, she said, Atlanta is very gay. Like, she was naming places, like, these places are gay. San Francisco is very gay. Baltimore is queer. Like, it's not. It is, like, so for me, and I love that. Like, and I love it because it is that, like, don't put us in a box thing. You know what I mean? Like, because it's the young, so the young, when it was called the ceasefire, we had youth ambassadors, like, I intentionally was like, we got to get young people involved in this work, and they need to be leaders in it. So we trained them to be ambassadors. And so there were these two ambassadors specifically who, like, taught us words we had never heard of before. Pansexual. I'm like, what the fuck is that? Right? And then they're explaining it to me. And what's the one where it's the person's mind that you're attracted to? So with the sapiosexual. And I was like, I think I got some of that in me too. Like, it's just like they... But, like, I'm like, okay, so only in Baltimore, do you, like, you whatever your social conditioning is, you look at somebody in Baltimore, you really literally don't know what the fuck you're looking at until they tell you. Because whatever you thought, you're probably going to be wrong when they start telling you how they really move through the world and how they show up. And next week, that same person might not look the same, right? Because, and that thing right there is what made me realize at 48 years old, oh my God, I can wake up. Like, I don't have to wait just because however I was dressed today, whatever vibration I was in today, I can literally wake up tomorrow and look like a corner boy because that's the vibration I woke up in. Like, I'm about to kill the game with these fronts and this gold chain and these, my, you know what I mean? My sneakers go match my tennis go match, my sweatsuit go match my, you know, when yesterday I was, had booty shorts on and my butt cheeks hanging out. You know what I mean? Like, and that is Baltimore. Like, we cannot be boxed in at all. Just when you thought, okay, so we have these, you know, these are the boxes of the rainbow. Baltimore is like, except nah, you know. And I think that that is the definition of freedom. I think it's the definition of rise. Like, one of my favorite things to say about Baltimore is that Baltimore is the ability to rise. And so, like, okay, so when I met you, for example, right, I was not out yet. And I was not completely sure how to name my sexuality and my gender expression at that time. So to be named a hero of the year in Baltimore's queer community fucked me up. Like, literally, I felt... Part of me, like, I, for a minute, I had imposter syndrome around it. You know, I was like, do they know what they saying? Like, I don't think, I literally was worried that I didn't deserve it, that I was taking some out queer, I'm like, they don't know me as any kind of gay. Like, where did this, like, it literally made me go, like, where did this come from? Although, you know, on the flip side of that, when I came out to each and every person, they laughed in my face like, bitch, you didn't know that you was already gay? Like, what is wrong with you? Because we been new. So, okay, you go deal with your shock, but let us know when you over it, you know, because it was clear and obvious to the rest of us. And I literally remember when the ceasefire first started in 2017, somebody made a post about me and called me queer. And one of my friends was like, she hasn't identified herself. Where are you getting this from? Why are you saying this? And the person, like, came and apologized to me. And I didn't feel offended by it. But it made me wonder, what are people seeing that they keep saying this to me, right? So by the time the gay pride parade came and I'm on the main float with y'all, I'm like, but these the badasses of that world. Do I really belong here? So to be seen... that, like, it was my humanity that made me a hero of the people, no matter who those people were. That's what I love about Baltimore. Like, that's the queer part right there, right? That, no, if you a hero, Baltimore is like, no, we fuck with you as the human that you are, and we see that you are for all of the people. But because y'all did that, again, it made me lean more into my own reality of the experience I was having with me. Not just my curiosities, but, like, I know what I fantasize about. I know which porn I really watch that really get me off. I know who I have had crushes on my whole life that I didn't know how to express I had crushes on them. I know why I wanted threesomes with a man and a woman. Whatever the man think, oh, I get two bitches. I'm like, no, I get two. Actually, y'all, my bitches actually is what's happening. Like, this is my joy, sir. Yeah, you know what I mean? It literally is my pimp side, right? And the fact that I could not, I never told the man, I'm with a man now, and literally this is the first person who hasn't just been able to talk about doing those things with me, but like the joy that he has of like, no, babe, we manifesting that shit. Like men say it because they get all excited, but then that part of them that feels like, I think I'm the man in the relationship, I think they don't feel as comfortable seeing me turn them and a woman out. Like, I think when they really think about it, they be like, I think she gonna be the one that fuck both of us, actually. So wait a minute, right? And so I needed somebody that could just let me be in all of my everything. And that's what Baltimore is. Like, you're not gonna come here and be like, oh, this is such a gay town. Like, except we all the things and we stay in. We don't just stand in those things, we float. I recently had a Reiki session where I realized I'm spiritually at a place where I don't have to stand in my power. I don't have to ground myself in it. Like now, like my what I am is just what I am. So I can float out this bitch in my freedom, in my power, in my truth, in my integrity, like all of that shit. And I love that about how queer Baltimore is. Is you literally, this bitch is a box of chocolates. Like, you literally, you don't know what you're going to get. And we dare you say some shit about it when you find out. It's that part, too. Like, I know you didn't see this coming, but watch your mouth, watch your face. Go gather yourself before you come over here and engage, because you will also get your edges snatched if you try to make us feel othered in any kind of way. Like, I love that shit. I love it.